Hello, my name is Jeff Cronshaw, Chief Electrical Engineer at the IET, and I'm joined by Mark Coles, the Technical Regulations Manager, to talk through some important issues on Amendment 3 of the 17th edition of the Wiring Regulations on the topic of fire protection. Now, Amendment 3 includes proposals for consumer units to have non-combustible enclosures rather than plastic. So, Mark, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Jeff. Thank you.
Can you tell us what faults have led to the ignition of these plastic consumer units?
Well, primarily, these have been due to loose connections within consumer units causing high-resistant heating across terminals. Mm. How do we get around this? Well, for instance, manufacturers might recommend that we use a Torx screwdriver to torque up the connections to ensure that they're tight enough. But let me ask you the question. Where has this requirement come from?
Yeah, that's a good point, that. Well, London Fire Brigade have received a lot of call-outs where the consumer unit has been found to be the source of the fire in domestic properties. As a result of this, London Fire Brigade have worked closely, they've been working closely with the Wiring Regulations Committee to include within the Wiring Regulations a suitable regulation to protect against fire. So that's really where it's come from. Amendment 3 includes this new regulation, and I'll just sort of read it out, if that's okay. 421.1.201. Within domestic household premises, consumer units and similar switchgear assemblies shall comply with BSEN 61439-3 and shall, 1, have their enclosure manufactured from non-combustible material, or 2, be enclosed in a cabinet or enclosure constructed of non-combustible material and complying with regulation 132.12. That last regulation, by the way, that's to do with accessibility, because obviously if it's in a cabinet, you still need to be able to gain access to it. So Mark, how do you think this new regulation is going to be received by the industry, and what the sort of general implications are going to be?
Well, firstly, let's look at the implementation date. Now, we know that this third amendment to BS 7671 2008, the third amendment goes live on the 1st of July 2015. Of course, the regulations themselves were published at the beginning of this year, in January 2015, but there's that 6 month period where we learn what's in the new regulations and we get ourselves trained up, and then come the 1st of July, we're all ready to go. So that's that 6 month period. So the third amendment goes live on the 1st of July 2015. However, this particular regulation, it was agreed within the committee, this is JPL 64, it was agreed that the implementation date of this regulation will be the 1st of January 2016. So that in itself is a further 6 months on from when the third amendment begins. So again, that's the 1st of January 2016 when this particular regulation goes live. Now, the next point to consider is that steel is deemed to be an example of a non-combustible material. Now, what I'd like to do at this point is to refer you all to a BEAMA bulletin. BEAMA, B-E-A-M-A, and if you go to their website, BEAMA.org, I think it's .org.uk, but you'll find them on the internet. They'd issued a technical bulletin. Now, BEAMA represent manufacturers of equipment, and they've put this technical bulletin together, and across the industry we've all agreed the content. But in there, it talks about how you get this consumer unit, which in itself will be non-combustible. And in there, it explains what they would expect to be non-combustible, if you like. They've carried out tests and they've come to the conclusion that it needs to be ferrous, it needs to be a steel enclosure. Now, some manufacturers claim that their plastic consumer units are fire rated up to 960 degrees C with this glow wire test. What BEAMA have found is that this 960 isn't sufficient. And the intent of this regulation, 421.1.201, is considered to be, as far as reason practicable, it should, the requirement is that the fire is contained within the enclosure and must minimise flames from escaping. Now, what they've found in their tests is that purely by having this metal box in itself will stop the flames from escaping, because there isn't a plastic enclosure and therefore will not catch fire. So your question really, Jeff, was how do we think that this is going to be received by industry, and what are the implications? Well, it's a big change, isn't it?
I think it is. I mean, traditionally, in most domestic premises, plastic consume units was the norm. I mean, metal consume units have been available for quite a number of years now, but in general, the norm has been to install a plastic consume unit. And obviously, this does bring in certain implications. I think it's important, as we've said, really, when installing metal consume units, that the entry point of the meter tails into the metal consume unit maintains the fire protection of the consume unit, as far as reasonably practical, obviously. And also, there are other issues. For example, when using a metal consume unit on a TT earthing system, it needs very careful consideration, because metal clad consume units on TT systems, the earth fault loop impedance obviously on the TT system is far greater. So whilst the meter tails rely on overcurrent protection and so on, they rely on the cutouts for overcurrent protection. With a TT system, you do get a high earth fault loop impedance, and more often than not, you install an RCD at the mains position for fault protection. So it brings its own issues, really, does metal clad consume units. And I think, Mark, we're going to include quite a bit of good guidance in our on-site guide that's coming out about this.
That's right. The on-site guide is due to publish first or second week in February 2015. And yes, there's a lot of guidance going into that. But let's just take a step back here, going back to the enclosure. And the question is, what constitutes a non-combustible enclosure? Now, if you consider this enclosure, it's a metal box with a lid, obviously. There are the components within, you know, the devices, the main switch, the RCDs, or the RCCB, if you like, RCBOs, or the circuit breakers. But also there'll be a hatch or a lift cover that allows you to access the devices to reset them, for example. There's also the hinges, the screws, the catches. Now, what constitutes a non-combustible enclosure? Well, it's all these components. So imagine you've got this metal box with all the components from the manufacturer. That is, that all together with all the screens, the shields, the covers, the hinges, everything that was provided initially by the manufacturer, that is your non-combustible enclosure. Now, if any of that is missing or any of it is damaged, then obviously then wouldn't be up to the requirements that the manufacturer originally intended. So that, hopefully that answers the question, what constitutes a non-combustible enclosure? It needs to be ferrous. And it needs to be, all the components that were provided originally need to be there and installed. So from that point, I just want to pick up what Jeff said about the TT earthing arrangement. If we consider the TN, let's say that within the consumer unit, remember we have these, usually they are single core conductors. So we've got the meter tails, which usually are insulated and sheathed, and they enter the enclosure and they'll go into the main terminals of that main switch. Then from the outgoing side, the load side of that main switch, we usually have single core conductors which then are looped within the box and then link in to each of the RCDs or RCCBs. Remember where we've got a split load board, for instance we might have two RCCBs, and each of those RCCBs then protect circuit breakers. Now, we have to get connections from the main switch to each of these RCCBs. Now, if they're single core conductors and they're in this metal box, there is a chance that they could become damaged or loose and touch the outer box. So the outer box obviously needs to be earthed. On a TNS or TNCS arrangement, that isn't really a problem because the main switch, we have the main cutout, and on a TNCS and a TNS arrangement, we should meet the disconnection times because we will be within the required ZS measurements, if you like, or the maximum ZS permitted for those devices. Could be a BS882 fuse, for example. But on a TT arrangement, where the earth fault loop impedance is very high, let's imagine it's 100 ohms, for example, which is perfectly acceptable, if the meter tails or the internal connections within that consume unit make contact with the metal box, then we're not going to meet that 5-second disconnection time. So theoretically, the fault could be sitting there for quite some time, and there could be a shock risk. So that's what we need to consider.
I think that's a good point, that Mike, really, because traditionally on TT systems, because of the high earth fault loop impedance, you fit an RCD at the mains position. But of course, the RCD only protects the outgoing circuits. It won't protect the meter tails. So if the meter tails became loose and or damaged and contacted the metal case of the consume unit, that will become live, and as you rightly say, you may not achieve the disconnection in the time required of 5 seconds, because of course you haven't got the RCD there in circuit. So what do you do? You've got a potential problem there, and as you touched on before, there's a whole range of consumer units now, some that have an incoming RCD, some that have individual RCD MCBs, if you like, combined for the outgoing circuits. Where you've got individual, or you could even have individual protection on each on each outgoing circuit, but where you do have the individual protection on the outgoing circuits, the RCB, the RCBOs, for example, if the supply to those RCBOs is individual cabling within the consume unit, there is a danger that that cabling could make contact. There could be a fault develop, and the casing becomes live. Now, if obviously the construction of the consumer unit is such that you've got a bus bar system in there, so the chances really of the consumer, the fault developing in the consumer unit becoming live are far less, then that is probably a much more safer option with a TT system. So I know this is a complicated sort of issue, but those are the sort of considerations to take into account should you have an incoming RCD at the mains position if you've got a TT system, or if you've got individual RCBOs, are they wired using individual cabling, or is it a bus bar system, the construction? And these are the sort of issues you need to take into account. And I think, Mark, you've included some pretty good guidance in the new on-site guide, where you've got a list of possible options.
That's right, yes. Yeah. So within the on-site guide, what we've looked at is what we need to consider. We need to consider the problems here. So three options have emerged from that. Now, the first is that we're on a TT arrangement, again, where the earth fault loop impedance is very high, and we've installed this metal consume unit. The first point is consideration should be given to the selection and installation of a class 2 metal consume unit. Now, we need to consult with manufacturers, because different manufacturers have their different products. So we need to consult with manufacturers, and they need to declare whether their product, whether this particular product that you want to install, whether they class that as a class 2 metal consume unit. So that is the first option. The second option is where you've got a class 1 metal consume unit, and each of the outgoing ways is protected by an RCBO. Now, if you consider where the meter tails would go into this board, the meter tails then go into the main switch, and the outgoing side of the main switch will then be a solid bus bar, which then comes out of those connection and then links in to each of the supply side of each of the RCBOs. Now, in that situation, we wouldn't expect that bus bar to drop out or to make contact with the metal box. So therefore, the risk of that bus bar coming into contact with the metal box is minimal. So within our committees, we discussed that, well, actually, we needn't have a front-end RCD, a time-delayed device, on there, because the connection to all the internal RCBOs is by this solid bus bar. So that's the second option. The third option is where we have a split load board. So we might have 1, 2, or 3, for example, RCCBs, which themselves protect circuit breakers, a number of circuit breakers in each RCD, and the problem there, as we talked about earlier, is that you have these single core conductors linking into the load side of each of these RCDs, and that's a problem there because of all these connections, there could be some damage in the future where that single core conductor could make contact with the metal box, the metal consumer unit. In these situations, the advice is to have a front end device, a front end RCCB, time delayed at 100 milliamps. So then you've got discrimination with the downstream devices, the downstream RCDs, which protect the individual circuits.
Yeah, that's a good point, that's a good point, that, Mark. So really what we're saying is we're giving people three options of advice. I mean, it's only recommendations, this, of course, but three options, which is the Class 2 device, if it's available, of course, because not all manufacturers may be making this. The Class 1 with an integral, the RCBO, which has got the integral protection, which is bus bar fed, or the third option, a Class 1 device split load with incoming S-type RCCD. So those are the various options. So having looked at those, I think there's a few points that really that we should cover as well in all cases, irrespective of what type of consumer unit you use. So I mean, I think it's important that the meter tails themselves are protected against mechanical damage and disturbance to avoid the meter tails becoming disconnected and touching the casing, say, of the consumer unit. So protection of the meter tails is an important point generally.
That's a key point, isn't it? That because it was highlighted, when we had these discussions, it was highlighted that in some instances, you could have a lift, for instance, installed in a particular area as an example, and this creates a lot of, well, maybe a lot, but over time, there's a fair bit of vibration has gone on. And if you've a conductor within a metal consumer unit, and it's being slightly moved every day, a little bit, because of the vibration or disturbance, it might be knocked frequently. Over time, of course, that vibration can result in abrasion of the insulation, and eventually that could make contact with the metal box.
Yeah, that's very true. And the other point really, generally, is the entry point of the meter tails, because going on about the point about abrasion, it's always good practice, obviously, to make sure wherever cables enter a sort of an enclosure or a box of any type, even your average run-of-the-mill metal-clad socket outlet box, for example, the average electrician's familiar with making sure that the knockout in the box and the cable that enters, there's no damage likely to occur on the cable, because obviously in a socket box you use a grommet. But in this particular case here, I think probably it would be advisable to use some sort of gland. And finally, of course, there's not really a lot of point in having a metal clad consumer unit to contain the fire if it's full of holes. So
right.
You need to make sure that both the entry point where the tails enter has got some sort of gland, and going back to your point before about the covers that lift off and all the rest of it, you've got to really maintain the IP protection of the metal clad consumer unit to achieve fire protection.
Well, the regulations require that the horizontal top surface of an enclosure of this nature has to be provided with protection of at least IPXXD or IP4X. Now, if we maintain that, we haven't really got a problem. And also elsewhere, after installation, the manufacturer's instructions will require that that IP2XC is maintained. So people have talked about, or the suggestion has been, do we need to include intumescent seals or intumescent strips within this metal box? Now, if you think about it, Where you've taken off the cover and you've made your connections when the installation's been dead or isolated, and then you come to put the cover on, there's absolutely no way that you're going to get little intumescent seals around the cutout window, if you like, of the cover that goes over the circuit breakers or the RCCBs. There's no way that you're going to get intumescent seals in there. It just isn't going to work. So BEMA have conducted tests, and they've found that by maintaining the IP ratings, or firstly of the regulations, and then ultimately, as pointed out here, with the manufacturer's instructions, you will then the fire protection, if you like, will be sufficient. And that's an important point. So we needn't go down the route of intumescent seals, unless, of course, where in the past, certainly when I was an apprentice, we were taught to cut slots in metal consume units or distribution boards, so we can get lots of cables in. And we used to use a bit of grommet strip around there to protect the cables coming in. Now, if we have to do that, if that's the only option in a particular situation, then surely you haven't maintained that IP rating required, so you need to do something else. But generally, intumescent seals would not be required as long as you maintain the IP ratings.
That's true. Another important point, of course, is while we're going to all this effort to maintain the fire protection, you've got to remember that because these are metal clad consume units, if you're passing the meter tails through them, they all need to go through the same hole, because if you don't, then you get a problem with eddy currents, of course. So you need to make sure that where the cables, the meter tails pass through, they pass through one hole and use a suitable gland. So that's an important issue. Going back to the regulation, the wording of the regulation, I'll just read the first bit again. It says, within domestic household premises, consume units and similar switchgear assemblies shall comply with this BSEN, blah, 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 and shall have their enclosure manufactured from non-combustible material. Now, I think one of the point there is that we've been asked is within domestic household premises. So what is that? Is that the house? Is that detached buildings or attached buildings? Do you need to install the metal clad consume unit if you had, say, a detached building in the garden? You know, I think these are perhaps difficult questions to answer, really.
What we talked about within the discussions that we'd had in putting the guidance together, as the regulation points out, within domestic household premises. Now, that's fairly cut and dry that you've got a consume unit within a household, within a domestic household premises. And then, of course, you might have a garage which is built onto the house. You can get access from the garage into the house, vice versa. Consume unit might even be in the garage. Well, it's fairly cut and dry, we feel, that is one unit, perhaps. And that certainly a metal consume unit should be used there. But the discussions went wider, and they became, I suppose, a bit more hypothetical. What if at the bottom end of the garden you've got a garage? What if that garage is 1 foot, for example, away from the house? Well, then we kind of thought, well, you know, within the dwelling it's cut and dried. Then you get into this grey area, and you move along, you move down the line where, clearly, if you have a building at the bottom of a garden, could be a huge long garden, bottom of the garden you might have a garage, that we could consider that is a non-habitable building. It might be domestic, but it's a non-habitable building. So what we put into the on-site guide was that where this building is not in close proximity, and this is always a moot point, it's not in close proximity to that original dwelling, then one could perhaps carry out a documented risk assessment, a fire risk assessment, if you like. And if you do decide that this building, this outbuilding, is sufficiently far away, and the risk, if there was a fire there, the risk to people escaping from the original building is minimal, then albeit that's your design, but you need to include a risk assessment, and that would need to be appended to the electrical installation certificate.
And of course, that's the responsibility of the designer. To take all that into into account. Just moving on a little bit now, we've really only covered sort of new installation work at the moment, but what happens when we're doing these periodic inspection and tests, and the electrical inspector comes across a situation where the consume unit is a plastic consume unit in a house? Now, obviously, if it's been installed and met the regulations at the time it was installed, and been installed a number of years, then it's very difficult then to sort of criticise that and say, no, this doesn't comply. Well, okay, it wouldn't comply with the the current Amendment 3 regulations, but it complied with the regulations in force at the time, if you like.
I think really, if you look at it, if you want to split hairs, we could install a plastic consume unit, let me get my dates right, plastic consume unit on the 30th of June 2005, but the very day after, well, we'd have to comply with the new regulations, if you like, we'd have to be metal. Well, of course, we need to approach this from a sensible point of view. So, when carrying out a periodic inspection, if you do, and I'm sure that you will for many years to come, a plastic consume unit can be discovered. Well, there are a number of things to consider. Remember that regulations require that we protect livestock, persons from the effects of electricity and fire, etc. We need to consider whether that consume unit would be sufficient for continued use. So when carrying out a periodic inspection, the advice would be, you know, check it. Has there been any signs of overheating? We talked earlier about where we install a consume unit, and the consume unit consists of all the parts, you know, the covers, the lids, the hinges, the seals, the screens, or whatever was provided when first installed. Everything that was provided when first installed needs to be there now. Otherwise, we could consider it not fit for continued use because some parts are missing. So that's something to consider. Are all the parts there that should have been there? And then beyond that, we need to look at the connections. Has there been signs of overheating? Are all the connections within there tight? Because that's been the main thing, these loose connections. So really, by assessing it from that point of view, if the consume unit is still in good working order, there's no signs of deterioration, then the conclusion could be it's fit for continued use.
That's right.
You might decide to allocate a code to that. A code, as in a, you know, the codes that we have, C1, C2, C3, you might decide to allocate a code to it. But really, if the installation is deemed to be fit for continued use, there's been no signs of deterioration, everything's there that should be there, then really we wouldn't expect that to be a C1 or a C2.
Oh, no, because that would mean it would be unsatisfactory, which... would not be the case. A C3 requires improvement, but even a C3 could be considered to be taking it too far if it's in good working order and it was, as I mentioned, complied with the wine regulations that were in effect at the time. So it may be that the inspector just makes a comment on the form to say that this is a plastic consume unit and it needs perhaps a little bit more monitoring, you know.
That is the key point there, isn't it? Because it has been highlighted, of course, that's why we are, that issues have been found with loose terminals, that the inspector should be recommending that more frequent inspections are carried out because these terminals can deteriorate. And I know that some manufacturers have found with their equipment that even on new installations, plastic consume unit, these faults can develop over time because of cyclical heating of conductors. And by that I mean you've got a load, it's on, heavy load, could be a shower, could be an oven or something, it's on, it's off, it's on, it's off. And the conductors are going to a higher temperature, then they're cooling, and then they're higher temperature again and cooling. And in doing so, where the terminals are, the terminals could become loose over time.
Yeah, good point.
So it's about the ensuring that those terminals, again, are fit for continued use. And as an inspector, it might be that you decide to advise, well, actually, because of the loading that's going on in this installation, I would advise a more frequent inspection. But also, just a point also to highlight, just because you've got a metal consume unit installed doesn't mean you can forget about periodic inspection. We still have the terminals that we need to consider.
Good point that, Mark. Yeah. Well, I think we've covered all the points there, really. We've covered the regulation, which requires metal clad consume units. We've covered the type of consumer unit, the type of metal clad consumer unit. We've covered the actual cable entries into the consumer units, the IP rating of the consumer unit, things like the protection of the meter tails. We've covered that. We've covered the issue of where metal clad consumer units are installed on TT earthing systems. we've covered general the general points to do with consumer units and detached buildings, and I think finally we've covered the issue of periodic inspection, haven't we?
Yeah, that's it. I think we've covered most things. Of course, as time goes on and people become more used to installing these consumer units, and of course as manufacturers develop more products which are more suited to this application, we'll probably need to revisit and have another discussion maybe in 6 months' time.
Yeah, that's very true, that, Mark. Well, thank you very much anyway for joining us, and we hope the listeners have found this informative. Thanks.
Yep. Well, thanks a lot. Also, we do intend to hold more discussions, if you like, that we'll be planning to go out to the elect shows around the country. There are 5 of them throughout the year, and we'll be having discussions there. So please feel free to come along and involve yourself in those and put your points of view forward. So thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff.